after quite an exciting episode last week, we're back. No worse for wear for another episode of Webcomics Weekly. We're down one member today. Dave's out with family stuff. And Chris was almost out because you just moved into a new place, right?
Yeah, we just got heat today. So feeling warm. Immediately cranked it to 90.
Now, are you officially in the new place now?
Oh yeah, we've been here for like 2.5 weeks, but we could not get anything done because of all these issues. So it's been scary.
That's
not the greatest. But we're in good enough shape that I can be on a podcast now.
Well, that's good.
And I was barely here today because I've been stuck at the house all day waiting for someone to show up and fix my internet. So forces are being. Good.
What?
Jeez.
I sat there waited, and as soon as I opened my mouth, I stepped on you again. Did you know those deals where you had to? They said I'd be here between 8 o'clock and 5 in the afternoon.
That is exactly what they said.
That's what I've been doing with the gas company today.
Yeah. And then when I called at 3 and said, "Look, it's Friday. I don't want to call you at 5 and find out you've closed down. Is someone coming out today?" Their response was, "Well, we have your office hours listed as 8 to 6, so we can come out as late as 6." And I was like, oh, okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for reminding me of my office hours.
He shows up at 2 a.m. and he's like, it's 6 o'clock somewhere.
Well, despite the forces conspiring against us to keep us from performing our podcast duties, we're here. Webcomics Weekly, I'm Scott Kurtz. With me is Chris Straub, starslip.com, and Brad Geiger over at evil-comic.com. And we're here tonight to talk about the process of making comics for the web.
Let me say real brief off the top that I regretted not being able to be on the big print and web podcast last week. But you guys all said exactly what I was going to say, so I would have been completely superfluous.
Well, I regret being on it, so I wish we could swap places.
We could have just switched out, and Brad and Dave could have talked for me, and everybody would have been happy. And you could have just, like, watched some TV.
It would have been great.
Yeah, I don't want to rehash that. I kind of felt kind of like Scott, though. I have not been able to re-listen to that podcast, and that's the only podcast that I've never listened to. Because I get about to the 15-minute mark, and I get so angry, and my blood pressure starts going up, and I got to turn it off.
Don't listen to it. There's no point in listening to it. Now, even our fans, I would say, if you missed last week's show, don't bother.
I mean, it's gotten a lot of talk. It started a really interesting conversation on Half Pixel Forum, but. Oh, I'm so frustrated.
I thought a really final note, a really good final note on it was that despite all the arguing and despite the debate, when it was over, everybody involved had to stop and go, okay, well, what do I got to do next? What in this huge list of things that I have to do today? What do I got? Like, we all just went back to our lives. It's not like. It's not like anything got solved. It's not like someone ended the podcast and sat there waiting for comics to come up and catch up with them. Everybody went back to doing their own thing. So
I would say as a good final note to that podcast that everybody dies. Someday everybody will be dead, and then it doesn't matter.
That is true.
Whatever.
So,
you know what? I've got a good transition there for you.
Oh.
Speaking of death. And one of the things that is commonly paired with death as being a routine, normal thing, taxes. We got a lot of questions about taxes. See how I did that? Death and taxes?
I thought you were going to say print was dead, but okay. Taxes.
That too, but that's beating a very dead horse. So here's a couple, and we got a lot. I'm just going to take one of them because he actually goes into a lot of detail. Joshua Jericho writes us, and he does a great comic over there at WTHComics.com. Joshua Jericho writes, hey, guys, short on the point and time. Since it's that time of year, would you talk taxes? Do you, and he goes right through a list. Maybe we ought to take them one at a time. Do you need to file a personal and business form?
You guys would be better at answering that because I still do business under my, like, I'm not incorporated yet. I still have, like, a DBA.
It's difficult for me to answer that question because it has been so long since I was not an LLC that I can't remember necessarily what I did. But it's really funny because I remember – I mean, basically – what is the rule, Brad? Is it like if you make over $700,
it's considered... I think depending on where you live, and we should say right at the top, none of us are lawyers, none of us are accountants, and you've got to take this with a grain of salt. If you haven't already gotten that idea through your head pretty clear, this is three cartoonists talking about what they know about taxes, and some of it may not apply to where you live.
Right. But, oddly enough, everything that we say is opinion and not... us saying it's fact.
I don't understand. What are you saying, Chris? I mean, what comes out of our mouth is not fact.
Taxes. Here we are talking taxes. And let me tell you what I remember, since I seem to be a little bit closer to it than Scott was. To answer your question, Scott, I think it's – I seem to remember five, but $7,000 or $700 might be the right number. Here's the deal. I always put everything through on my personal taxes right up until the time that I filed to have a license to collect sales tax. And I needed that before I could start going to conventions and selling things in certain states, like Pennsylvania, specifically Philadelphia. Once I started to have a sales tax license, then I started to put everything that I built for the comic strip into a separate bank account. And that's something that it's really important for you guys to do once you start going to conventions and selling things. Set up a separate bank account that only handles your business. Your profits go into that. All of your revenue goes in. And anytime you buy something, it's good to have it come out. And I'll tell you why. All of this stuff that you're going to be doing around April and March to get ready for your taxes, you're going to want to remember everything that you spent and everything that you earned, so you can have it filled out on your tax forms, and in doing, hopefully save you a little bit of money as opposed to sending it all to the government. And you can do that very easily if you keep that all as a part of one bank account. You can take a look at those bank statements, and everything that you've got there is just revenue and expenses for your comic. So once you start getting to the point where you're doing those kinds of things, you do need to file both a business and a personal income tax form. And I'm going to strongly encourage you to get involved with a CPA. And here's what I found about CPAs. They charge you money, but my CPA saves me way more money than he charges me. I'm able to pay my CPA very, very easily out of the amount that he saves me in income taxes every year.
Hmm.
What I want to recommend and recount is the steps I took to this, because what's going to happen with most web cartoonists is that they're going to get to the tax time and kind of go over the money they made and realize they made probably more than they thought they did.
Because
I remember that's what happened with me. I don't think I don't think I had planned the first year I made enough money to have to actually start considering how to file it differently. And so, you know, if you are looking at tax time and you know that you've made anywhere from, you know, more than a couple hundred bucks this year from your webcomic, then whoever you file your taxes with, even if you go down to an H&R Block, you just need to let them know how much you earned. And they'll let you know how to file it for this tax year. And I think that's the first thing I want to say, because I remember we were kind of scared when it happened. We went and reported to our tax guy that we had made this much money, and he said, well, you're going to have to file this as a separately as a self-employed income, and it was all supplemental. I'm sure it's different with every state too, right, Brad?
Yeah, yeah. This is going to vary state to state, which is why, again, you're going to want to get a CPA. And like Scott says, even if it's H&R Block,
yeah,
you're going to want to get a professional involved. I don't suggest doing this on your own.
But what I'm saying is the first time you deal with it is usually a situation where you kind of wake up around tax time and realize, oh, my God, I didn't realize I earned this much money from my webcomic this year, but excuse me, now that I add it up, that's a significant amount.
But here I am, and yeah, I got to do something about it. That's how it happened for me, too.
That's how it happens for most people. But once you've my advice is don't panic. Just take your information to even an H&R Block guy, and they'll tell you how to file it properly for where you are. But from then on out, you know, from that point on, you need to start planning for your next year under the assumption you'll make that much money, if not a little bit more. And the reason why I say that is not just so you know how to file it come end of the year, but so that you know to save a portion of that money to pay the tax man. Because
right.
The money that you earn from your webcomics doesn't go through an employer who takes out your taxes and gives you a check. The money just comes to you, and you're responsible for keeping a portion of that money set aside to pay the tax guy at the end of the year.
And
so,
that's why it's important to keep track of everything that you spend on your webcomic. And this, and here's a few things that the guy said, and this leads right back to the question. He says, what can I claim on my taxes? All right?
Yeah, well.
And the answer is, what can't you claim? I mean, a CPA, I asked that to my CPA, and the CPA says you can claim anything right up until you're audited. Then you got to start proving things.
Yeah.
You know? But here's the deal. I every time I go to a convention, I keep track of my hotel bill because I claim that. I claim travel expenses to the convention and back. I claim any other expenses that are incurred while I'm out of town. I keep track of what I spent on food,
yeah.
What I spent on those sorts of things. And obviously, for Pete's sake, keep the receipt because you're going to need more than just your bank statement, although and I don't know the ins and outs on that, but do keep your receipts. You want to have something that proves that you were here or there. If you take a taxi from the airport to your hotel, ask the taxi driver for a receipt. He'll hand you a little business card that you fill in how much you spent, how much you tipped him. Try to tip those guys good. They work hard. What the date was, and then I always write up in the corner which convention I was attending. So, yeah, all of your convention expenses, keep track of all the ink and bristleboard and supplies that you buy to do your comic strip. Keep track of that. All the software that you buy that specifically is used just to do your comic strip. It shouldn't be something that you use for personal and for business. It should just be the stuff that you use that you can prove you just did for business. You can take that stuff off. Keep the receipts. This podcast headphone that I'm using right now to talk on the podcast, I applied that to this year's taxes. All right. The printer I use that I print out color prints that people buy, I claim that on my taxes. All right.
So
go ahead.
I was just going to say that the really obvious stuff, you know, I don't have a problem advising people on. Like, I mean, obviously art supplies go towards producing your product that you're earning the money from, so it's deductible. But what you should do is if you're to the point where you're going to be deducting things and this is going to be a second income or a primary income, you need to talk to an accountant when your year starts, and he will give you a good idea of what you can start claiming. And what I did was got a separate credit card specifically for business purchases. And it's one of those credit cards with a very small limit that's paid off every month. The purpose of it is not to give myself credit or to loan myself money to expand the business. The purpose of it is to have a paper trail for every purchase I made. that's business wise. So if I'm making a purchase for the business, I use that card, and then I don't have to, because I'm horrible about keeping receipts. But then you have a paper trail, and if you research it, some credit card companies, especially if you let them know it's going to be a business type account, you get a report every year that divides all of your purchases up into different categories conveniently for you.
That's
my favorite thing to do now at tax time is I get a report. I think it's from Citibank Miles, but yeah, so I get a report at the end of the year, and it divides everything up: food, entertainment, electronics, travel. It does it all for me. Lodging. And so it's very easy to itemize that for tax time. But what my biggest piece of advice, and I give it freely, I'm super paranoid about taxes. I'm over paranoid about it. I'm just terrified. I'd rather pay too much. You know, my dad is the kind of person that's very, well, there's no need to loan the government money that you can be earning interest on. I don't care. I just don't want to ever go to jail. I don't want to be audited. And something else you need to keep in mind, and if you ever get a freebie because of your webcomic, someone sends you a free video game to review, a product, all of that needs to be listed as an income.
Oh, I never knew about that.
Yes, that's something that
good tip.
That's something my accountant pointed out. I get a lot of – now, this isn't something that you're going to review and send back. This is something that you're being sent as a gift.
Right.
The year Microsoft just out of nowhere sent me an Xbox, somebody there sent it to me. All of that technically should be listed as income, the value of it, and you need to pay taxes on it.
Wow.
And that's, you know, that's the reason why it's important to, at the beginning of the year, go talk to an accountant about what you plan to do for the rest of the year. And it was really great because when we went to our accountant the first year, we didn't have an LLC. We told him the kind of money we made, and he told us not to worry about doing X, Y, or Z. And then the next year when he saw that we had gone up in the amount of profits we were making from the webcomic, that's when he decided we should you know, get separate business accounts, start making deductions, start filing as a business, put up a corporation type thing, and so.
Yeah, that's probably the best advice we can give you right now, and we're going to come back to it again, and that is start a relationship with a CPA, because this guy is going to, or this woman is going to follow you throughout your career if you start a good relationship, and if you at first you don't succeed in finding someone who understands your needs and so forth. You know, talk to a few people in your state who do similar things, maybe freelance graphic designers, things of that nature, and find an accountant that, you know, gets what we do and build a relationship with that person, because they're going to guide you. I had the same exact conversation with my CPA this year where I said, hey, am I to the point yet where I need to start incorporating and doing that. And once he stopped, you know, he looked at my income, and once he stopped laughing, he gave me a very, very good answer.
What did he say?
Oh, no, he said for me, I just don't need to worry about that just yet. He said it would be more cost prohibitive,
let me interject here, not to contradict your CPA, but I want to point out to you and to our listeners the main reason that I incorporated. And mm-hmm. It was because my father called me and screamed at me for not being incorporated simply for liability reasons.
Well, okay, now that's the question he asked me. He said, are you liable for anything with your comic? Could anyone sue you? And I said, well, you know, I guess you could sue anybody for anything, but I couldn't imagine an instance in which someone could sue me.
I can.
Okay, go ahead.
This is the scenario that my father described to me and scared the bejesus out of me. There's a shooting at a school, and one of the gunmen is wearing a PvP shirt, and everybody wants to blame it on your comic.
Oh.
Are you really worried about that?
No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is, let me give you that was my father being an ultra paranoid parent.
Okay.
But let me give you a really good example. I was at a convention one year. This was years ago. And this kid came up and said, you know, I've seen you at this convention every year. When are you going to put me in your comic? And I said, I guess I'll put you in my comic this week. And he said, fantastic. So I put him in the comic as kind of a lark, someone that looked like him. And then later on, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months later, I decided that I liked the way that the character looked and I liked the design of him. And so I would turn that design into a regular character as opposed to just, you know, a cameo.
Right. I always wondered how you came up with Brent Sienna, but go ahead.
Very, oh, Brad, you gadfly. So what ended up happening was this kid just assumed that I was chronicling his adventures. And when that character ended up incidentally in the background of a T-shirt, he started emailing me about wanting royalties from the shirt.
No.
For likeness rights. And he involved the organizer of the convention in it.
So
you never know what is going to pop up. And so really what I did was I filed for an LLC. Now this, again, go to a CPA. He can tell you what best to do for you. But what it did is it created a separation of monies between the part of me that's a corporate entity and the part of me that's a personal entity. And so what ends up happening is what you're doing is you're stating, here's what part of this money is my business's and what part is personally mine.
Well, that is a good point.
And so the reason for that is, Brad, is if for any reason anyone wants to sue you, they can only go after the money of the companies. They can't come after your home, your personal income. You know, they can bankrupt your company, but it separates you as a person from what your company and your product is.
Right. They can hurt your company, but not your family.
Correct. And I was actually sued in small claims court over one year previous over a disagreement with an advertising client.
It
really? It was a lawsuit for $1,000, and I had to go in as Toontown Studios and defend it as Toontown Studios, so I didn't pierce that corporate veil. So you never know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, certainly, the worst case scenario that my father described didn't happen.
Right.
Knock on wood, it never will. But you know, you just never know what's going to happen. And let me tell you, even the $1,000 small claims court thing was a huge pain in the ass.
I'll bet.
So I can only imagine something larger happening. But
guys, if I'm being quiet, it's just because I'm taking notes. this year I'm going to have to start doing that. All of this. I just got a separate bank account and all that, so that I could keep track of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no functional advice, but I could wave a pennant and be very supportive of your points.
Well, okay, now here's a question. You've got a new house, Chris. Do you have one room of that house that you only do your comics in?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You can deduct part of your rent as a business expense.
Or if you're
really?
Homeowner
can deduct part of his or her mortgage.
Yep.
Because I know I deduct and that even gets into how much money I put into the upkeep of the house. If we had to put a couple thousand dollars into a sewer problem that we had thanks to a tree that was growing out front. All right. I kept all those receipts, and I was actually able to take a portion of that and apply it to my taxes.
Are you serious? The tree?
The tree's roots. I mean, this is Philadelphia. You got to realize I don't have a front yard. I've got a sidewalk, and there was a tree planted out there. The roots had gotten down into the sewer. I broke up the sewer pipe. We started getting stuff backing up.
Oh, I see. It was a damage to your house.
Right.
Okay.
But getting that fixed, cost a couple thousand dollars, and I was actually able to apply that to my taxes because that's upkeep on my, I guess, place of business.
But, Chris, you have internet coming into your house, right?
Yeah.
And that's for your business. You personally don't care about the internet. You watch TV and play card games.
Right. Well, I was going to say that I don't actually pay rent because I am homeless. This house is really just a huge office.
Yeah. Now, Chris, do you urinate?
Only sometimes.
Only when you're working, right?
Right.
Well, every flush can be deducted.
Well, I'm actually deducting
it twice in that case.
I don't know if this is just my CPA, but I kept track of all my electric bills, all my cable bills, and I take a percentage that is based on the percentage of this office in the house off on all of those utilities.
That's true. I could do that, but I'm too lazy.
Well, that comes down to, you know, like I said earlier in this podcast, my guy saves me enough money that I can pay him and a whole lot more.
Yeah.
That, I mean, doing that kind of thing helps a lot.
Yeah, I can't deduct my home stuff anymore because I have an office outside the house, I think. I don't think I can do both. I need to
It depends on how much you work. If you're like, I'm always working. I deduct my bed because sometimes I'm dreaming about my work. So.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's awesome to get to deduct your comic books as a business expense.
Oh yeah, I do that too.
Yep.
All the comics that I buy, because I say, well, yeah, I write about that in my blog and so forth, and that's research about supervillains, and I take all my comics off on my taxes.
That was one of the things is that was a hilarious episode with me at my accountant's office, because he's like, well, you buy comic books, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, you can deduct that. And I go, no, I enjoy reading those. I would buy them anyway. And he said, yeah, but Scott, you're keeping up with the industry. That's the industry you're in. You're reading that. Those are your business trades. You're keeping up with what's happening in the industry. You're allowed to deduct that. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, do you have a TV in your office? Yeah. Do you watch DVDs on it? Yeah, all the time. All right, you need to deduct your DVD purchases too. No, not DVDs. He's like, well, not when you buy for the wife, but if you buy a DVD to catch up on animations or anything that relates to relates to the inspiration of your work, you need to deduct all that. And it took me a long time to become comfortable with it, just because of the nature of what I do. I think if I was a plumber, it would be easier to say, well, yes, obviously I need this copper. Right. But it's a little scarier.
I know where you can find copper.
It's a little scarier when you're a cartoonist because some of your supplies are conceptual.
Right. And here's the thing about audits is that audits have become kind of a pop culture demon. That, you know, it's been used in so many sitcoms and so many functions. You know, getting audited is the big drama hook. And here's the deal. If you get – unless you're doing something really crooked, and this is another reason to have a CPA involved, because most likely he or she can kind of steer you clear of doing crooked things. But unless you're really trying to do something shady, what's going to happen in an audit and I've got to say I've never been to one, but I have talked to people who have. What's going to happen is they're going to go down and they're going to say, okay, we're going to allow this. We're not going to allow that. Do you have proof of this? If you do, we'll allow it. And if you don't, we'll disallow it. They'll come up with a new figure, and either it's higher than the figure that you claimed or it's lower in some cases. And then you take it from there. And if there's a penalty.
Brad, do you even know? Does a tax man, like in the sitcoms, there's always like a tax man in a tweed suit coming to your house, and he's like. Like, does a tax man come to your house, or is it one of those things where it's handled via your accountant?
I've never heard of a tax man coming to the house, but then again, that's something I have no experience with.
Hello, Mr. Geiger. My name is Ira, and I'll be your auditor today.
And then he just lives at your house.
Yeah.
And he sleeps in your bed with you.
And then like, you're trying to show how you live very fastidiously, and then your wife comes in like, look at this new necklace I bought, and you're like,
I always think think about that, because they always say if you have a studio, it's got to just be used for your comic. It can't be used for anything else. So I cleared out. I've got a closet in here. I don't use the closet for clothes. And all of a sudden it hits me, and it's like, do I really expect these guys Gestapo-like to come marching up to my door? If that happens, I've never heard of it. But
Mr. Geiger, what is this here? A sock?
But it is a brown sock, so, you know, take that into account. But,
oh,
no,
man.
Cut that out. That was impolite. here's the deal. I've never heard of anybody actually coming out to your house. And usually what it sounds like is they send you a letter. They say, hey, we got a few questions to ask you. You go in with your accountant, and you answer the questions. And, you know, as long as you're not trying to do something really, really underhanded, just my layman's opinion is that you're probably going to come out with all your fingers and all your toes. You might be smarting a little bit, but you'll be just fine. Don't spend too much time dreading getting getting an audit, because even as a freelance graphic designer, you probably are going to get audited. I mean, it's just going to happen sooner or later. It's the nature of what we do. We take off some stuff on our taxes, like comic books, that tends to raise some eyebrows down at the IRS.
Maybe.
Get over it. It's going to happen sooner or later. Just
not if I get out. I quit.
My only fear of an audit is that my paperwork is in such disarray that it'll just be like I'll be showing up with shoeboxes full of crumpled papers. Ha-ba-ba-ha-ba. All right.
But isn't that what it's like when you keep all your receipts? Some of those places, they print the receipts on the paper that fades it, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I don't know how you handle that.
All my stuff ends up in folders and folders and folders of stuff. I mean, I flatten it out and it ends up in folders. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure everyone does something different, but
it's hard to get rid of all that stuff. I mean, it really is. But you know, it's possible. I guess the bottom line is don't freak out too much about this stuff.
But just be prepared.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the best thing you can do is be prepared.
I will be prepared next year.
Prepare for the worst. Well, all right, I think we've pretty much done that one to death. You want to
certainly not. You're certainly not alone in that thought, Chris.
Every year, next year, the same thing.
Save your receipts. Okay. What do you guys want to do next? I know the one we want to do next. So this guy writes us, and this is a question I'm really flummoxed that hasn't come up sooner. And he writes us a question on comic strip etiquette. Hmm. And in case you haven't noticed, I'm vamping because I lost it in my pile already here.
Oh, wait, hold on. Okay, I got it too.
David Terry, who does a comic at tganimation.net, says, Dear Web Comics Weekly, I'd like to know how you deal with people who insist on trying to give you their stupid ideas about what to do in your comic strip. I'm talking about the kind of people who say things like, I've got a great joke you could use in your comic. Emails I get like this are easy enough to ignore, but my problem is somebody starts talking to me about it in person. It's usually a friend or family member, so I don't wish to hurt anyone's feelings. Is there a way I can let somebody know I'm not interested in taking external ideas without being put downish?
Oh, I know. What you do is you tell them that you can't use it because of the liability, and then you just use it.
I can't use it because of tax purposes.
I'm not incorporated, so I can't have your idea. Because then you would be my employee and I would pay you.
Here is the etiquette on this. I have the definitive etiquette.
I'd love to hear it because this happens to me too.
If it is an idea that you absolutely hate or is just garbage, you write back and you say, although you appreciate the support and that they love the strip enough to where they want to come up with ideas, that you legally can't read another person's idea for fear that they might later come back and claim that you took it from them. And it's very common amongst writers that that's the case. I mean, that's just a good policy to have anyway. But
now, what if it's a friend or a family member, though?
Well, if it's a friend or family member.
Then it's even easier to tell them off.
Well, that's what this guy is asking. He says, hey, these guys are my friends and my family, and I don't want to hurt their feelings.
I was going to say, if you like the idea, then what you respond is, hey, looks like great minds think alike. Stay tuned. You know, don't be surprised. And then you take the idea.
Right. Because what else can you do?
Nothing. You take that idea and you use it, and then you claim it was yours. It's very simple.
But I don't. Go ahead.
No, if it's friends or family members, that for me is easy. Friends and family members, I have no problem saying, yeah, Bob, you stick to plumbing, and I'll write the jokes. All right, pal. Okay.
And then he's just fuming. That angered him. You're not friends with Bob anymore.
And you're not going to get any more free toilet work done.
I really just don't have a, especially with friends and family, I just don't have a problem.
Let me extend this guy's question, because I don't get a lot of emails that say, you know what you should do is this. What I do get is a lot of people in my forum saying, oh, I bet he's going to blank, or I bet this storyline is going to XYZ. And I haven't actually written that far yet.
Yeah.
And now you're upset because they're tainting your creative process.
Or I'm upset because their idea was better. Or they guessed it.
Well, what do you do about that?
Oh, well, I just use it.
Again, it depends if the idea is good or bad. If the idea is bad, you go in the forums and you say, all right, everybody calm down. The story's been written, and you're going to like it, trust me. And then if you don't like their idea, if you do like your idea, you say, I think someone's going to be pleased with the way this storyline turns out.
Well, I'm dissatisfied with you guys' answer, and I think down to this. I think me and David are both, and it's killing me that Dave's not here. Scott, you're going to have to pinch hit.
Oh, gosh.
David Terry, you got to call us back or write us back. I'm going to bet you're from the Midwest, because what Dave is saying is that friends and family members come up with ideas for his comic, and he, like me, is too Midwest to just tell him to stop it. And I go through the same thing. People say, oh, you should put that in your comic strip. And part of me is so thrilled that a family member is actually recognizing my comic strip that I really want to positively reinforce that. But at the same time, it's a horrible idea. And I'll tell you what I do, David Terry. Here's what I do. I say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to use that sometime. And then I promptly forget about it. There's a lot to be said for the Midwestern concept of denial and keeping things pushed down. You just say,
yeah, no,
yeah,
I mean,
that's a great idea, even though in your mind you're saying that it's horrible. And then you say, you know what? And then if they ever do ask you, you say, oh, my God, but I've got so many ideas. It's on my list. I just got to get around to it. And then you just wait them out. Wait them out.
But you know what? Don't go overboard and be like, oh, that's the best idea I've ever heard. Let's be best friends. And then you got to hang out with them. And you're going over to his house, and you're like, I don't want to hang out with this guy, and it sucks. So.
Yeah, you do have to be careful. You don't want to give him too much positive reinforcement.
you know what? You should come on board and be my writer.
I've been looking for a collaborator.
I just want to tell you that I just want to say that as difficult as it might be, especially if you are from the Midwest, a polite no is so much easier to weather than a placating yes that will come to bite you in the ass and follow you around like a lost puppy for your days and days to come.
And I think that if you tell them the reasoning, you know, if you just go, no, 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 I can't. I'm sorry, I can't. If that, you know, I can understand somebody getting upset at that. But if you tell them outright, like, look, I can't use it because I'm worried about, you know, who would say who came up with it first and all these other reasons. And then if they're still mad, then I don't, you know.
Well, what I, in all seriousness, Brad, I'll give you something that I have said to somebody in the past is what you do is when they give you an idea, you try to break it down in your head to what the basic concept of the joke is. And, you know, whether it's you're pointing out a truth that everybody knows but maybe has forgotten, or It's a social commentary or something like that. And you think to yourself, have I done that already? And if you do, you say, you know, I did a joke very similar recently, but I, yeah, you're right, it is a good fodder for the strip. I've done that before. Or you say, you know what, I should use that for the strip later, but don't be surprised if you don't recognize it, because I, by the time I get around to it, I'll probably put my own spin on it, but, you know, I'll send you an email if the concept ever makes it in. You know, and then you've addressed them. Because, I mean, you know, it's not that you don't want their input or don't like hearing their ideas. It's just that, you know, there's a process to writing, and you've got to fit it in. I mean, look, sometimes the idea's great, and I'm like, do you mind if I use that? And they're pretty excited most of the time.
Although what I found is that usually when that happens, they're not even pitching it to you. They just say something, and you're like, oh, my God.
That's so going in the strip.
Hey, do you find that, typically it's something that happens, and you go, God, that is funny. I'm going to use that. Like, can I use that? That's good. That's when you want to use it. But when it's like, hey, I got a killer idea for your strip, it should go like this, and that's terrible. That's always a bad idea.
Right.
I never want to use those.
And I think that's a psychological thing too, because as soon as somebody starts saying, "I got a great idea for your strip," to a lot of people, I'll just expose myself. Sometimes what I'm thinking is the person's actually saying, "You know, I could write your strip a lot better than you could." You know, there's a little touch of that, and it immediately puts you on your defensive, and you don't want to admit that somebody else could write your strip better than you.
Yeah,
Am I wrong? Am I crazy? I'm not crazy. Are you?
I'll have to bleep this out later, but there's a part of you that when someone says that, you're like, yeah, well, I don't come down to your work and knock out of your mouth and tell you how to do your job. You know, it's like there's a part of you that's like, don't tell me how to do my job. I know how to write my comic strip.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, stop that. This is a joy that I have. Don't try to tell me that you're better at it.
Chris, are you broadcasting from the street?
Why? What happened?
I just heard a car go by.
Yeah, I'm on a corner. I'm panhandling.
Are you podcasting from your cartooning stand out on the curb?
No, I'm recording a podcast with some bums after this. I gotta get my stuff set up.
You're doing hobo talk?
Yeah, we have the barrel with fire in it that we're all warming ourselves by. That's ready.
Lots of hobos shuffling. Fire in the barrel. It's a mad dog to be found.
Oh my God!
I'm pulling on the fingerless gloves as we speak.
Tonight on Hobo Talk, stabbing.
Tonight on Hobo Talk, stabbing. Yes or more?
Comics. Anyway.
But enough about me.
But enough about Chris.
And my cars. Let's just hit the next question.
You know what? I got more questions here. That would be good. You know what? We've got one here that says... Oh, he goes, I've been listening to Webcomics Weekly a lot, and great webcomic. Right now I'm thinking about making a book. Thing is, my comic is full color every day. And he's having trouble justifying the cost with doing a print run. So basically he's saying, how do I get that done?
Well,
I guess the question is it better to print a book in black and white, convert your color to black and white to bring the cost of the book down, or is it better to bite the bullet and print a color book and maybe bring the number of pages down or do something else to make that possible?
Here's the problem, Brad. When you print in color, you're printing in what we like to call, and we talk about this in the book, CMYK.
Oh, God!
And that could be hundreds of billions of trillions of color combinations.
Which every one of them costs like a penny.
And you, as a cartoonist... printing in color, if you aren't aware of the exact number of possible color permutations.
Look, Scott, look, there is always at least a 0.027% deviation from that number. So clearly,
this... without a prismologist at your side, printing in color is a dangerous proposition.
My CPA is a prismologist.
We would never want to mislead you. And
hey, did you say CPA? Let's talk about taxes.
I would
just pain.
If you're doing print on demand, I would avoid color like the plague. It increases the cost so much.
But can you get a good color cost if you're doing a print run?
I don't know.
I still think it's a little exorbitant.
I don't know. I mean, we printed the Justin book in color, and I never thought about it. I mean,
well, here's the question: How many did you print, and what did it cost?
I don't remember. Image took care of it.
$250,000.
I don't. What I'm saying is, I don't think it's. I think that. Look, you're going to have to compare the two. And if printing in color, if your cheapest cost in color is too much, obviously you can't print in color. So my advice is to, what I would do is take those color files and convert them to grayscale and print that, because those gray tones print beautifully. And
You know what's funny, though?
What?
And maybe it's because I don't know how to color, but and everybody else saw it. But when I took the color Checkerboard Nightmare and I made them grayscale, it was such an awakening, because it's all RGB. And then when I flatten it and I make it gray, what I thought were light colors are actually very dark.
Huh.
You know, like I always saw Lyle as a blonde and Chex as having a little dark hair because his hair is purple. But when I convert it to grayscale, Lyle's hair is very dark because it's a saturated yellow. You know?
Yeah.
And it looked wrong. Everything kind of was dim as a result of it.
I do remember, and I wish I could remember the exact percentage, because it was a trick John Kovalik taught me. I wonder if Aaron is online and could remind me of this. I don't see him online, but when I was self-publishing with Dorkstorm Press, we did a lot in grayscale. And John's rule was nothing over 20% gray did he ever print, because it looks just too dark. I think it was 20%.
I got the same advice from Paul Taylor of Wopsy Square.
Really?
Yeah, I think his number was like 30, but it was do not ever go over that.
Yeah.
30%. And I love to go over it, and it looks, and it's my. I may as well be printing black on black.
There is a way in Photoshop to test that, and I can't remember how to do it. So I will look it up and remind everyone for next episode. I will research that.
Don't you think that there is a market that maybe we're not as savvy about for a much shorter book that is color?
How do you mean?
Well, that's what I'm kind of wondering. I mean, that's your other variable. You can print a color book and bring your number of pages down.
Right. You bring your price down too, and then you print a shorter book. You make a color, and maybe you sell it at more like an SPX type of a con. You know. Exactly. Next question.
That's how I feel about that.
I got shot down.
You know what you can do? I do know this. I do know that if you print on a certain color cover stock, I know that Kirkman, when he prints Invincible, he does 24 pages self-cover, meaning the interior pages of his comic, the slick interior pages, is the same stock as his cover. Every piece of paper is the same, even the cover. Hmm. And the cost is negligible comparatively to black and white on a nicer stock. And I think you can get away with a lesser quality stock in color because the color, you know, offsets it. But I remember when I've printed something in color and in a pamphlet form, in a comic book form, it was not substantially more, depending on how many you print. But, yeah, you could definitely print a color...
Like a 50 page, like a 30 page.
And I've done this in a comic too, in the book. You can have a color insert in your print run of black and white. You can have a middle section of 8 to 16 pages. It's color. so you can have some color in it.
Also, chromium hologram cover.
What else would I recommend? This was a very unique look. I don't know if necessarily it would work for everyone, but are you guys familiar with the comic called Hero Bear and the Kid?
Yeah.
Okay. That is a black and white book, but it had one color in it. He printed red.
Mm-hmm.
And so he essentially could use any shade of that red, from red down to pink. And so he almost monochromed a lot of it. And so
yeah, I always like that.
In other words, instead of doing a process color situation, he did a spot color where he did black plus one colored ink.
Yes.
And he could screen that ink from 0 to 100% to get a whole wide range of all of the shades in between that ink.
Hundreds of billions of trillions of shades possible.
More shades than there are numbers.
You could count until you died of old age. The number
like
of colors. Okay. That's I know that was
that,
I,
and that's a brilliant idea. By
I know
way.
For a fact that was cheaper than a four color process,
and
so,
it looks really good.
It has a unique look to it. Yes.
So think okay. about it.
So think now, about it, kids. Color.
Do we have time for one more question?
Yes.
Yeah, real quick.
Are we gonna wrap it up?
I can do one more.
We can do one more. No, let's do one more.
Okay, I'll give you a choice. I've got a question of giving up on your dream or cyber squatting. Which do you want to take?
Cyber squatting. I don't think
let's,
I can handle
let's
giving
do,
up on
let's
your
do,
dream.
All right, here's giving up on your dream. Don't. All right.
Okay.
See you next time.
Yeah, here's giving up on your dream. Buy our book. Give it one more shot. Based on our factual things, print the book that is 100% pure fact, not opinion.
And read it,
and then reap the benefits, and then give us a call.
I'll see you later.
I'll see you later.
Okay, Brian Cox writes, what do you do if the title of your comic is something generic, such as Lamp Post? And he says that's not the title of his eventual comic. And someone is cyber squatting on the obvious URL of lamppost.com. They do not have a site up. They simply own the rights to the domain name. The act of choosing the URL for your comic before you post it to the web seems like a very big deal to me if you want to choose the most recognizable name that will generate the most traffic to your site. Do you offer this person a sum of money to buy the rights to the URL, and if so, how much? Or do you simply add the word online or comic to your URL, like lamppostcomic.com, wishing, hoping, and knowing that the URL you really wanted can never be yours? And he's got one just as an addendum to the end of that, while you guys are thinking of your answer. Chris, do you think your comic would be hurt if originally you were required to set it up as starslip-comics or starslip-online.com?
This is a tough question for me because I have a very strong emotion about it. If I have a name for a strip in mind and I the first thing I do is I go look that phrase up on Google. And if I find more than like 20 of it, I don't use it. I don't want to touch it. And if I go look it up and the domain is not available, I don't want it. I'll figure something else out. There are enough words in the language that I do not need that title. You know, would my comic be harmed if it was like Starslip Comic or whatever? I feel like if I can dodge that, then please, yes. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want online on there. I don't want comic. I don't want mystarslip.com. I don't want any of those tricks that say to me the other domain was taken, you know. I think to keep it as short as possible. But I don't know. That's my thing. And maybe maybe it's unreasonable for me to do that.
Well, Scott, who does a comic at pvponline.com, what's your thoughts?
It's hard for me to say. I think that when I first registered the domain, pvp.com was not available. It was actually owned by a prince. It was Prince Von something with a P. And so we just went through different ideas of permutation, and we actually put it up to vote with the readers, and they all liked PvP Online. And it was just kind of – it was my first domain I ever registered. So I registered PvP Online, and multiple times in the last 10 years, PvP.com has become available. And I haven't taken it because at this point I've established PvP Online as a brand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I think that if you can get – I honestly really don't think it super matters. I mean, like if you're starting a Web 2.0 company or a .com company and you know, you know it's going to be about you know, lampposts and you need lamppost.com – you're going to have to try to find lamppost or some derivation of it, or if you have an established product and you need the URL, then I can understand, you know, paying a cyber squatter. But it just seems to me that if you haven't established a brand yet and you have an equal opportunity to establish a domain name that is available as a brand, then I don't think it matters.
That's kind of my feeling about adding comics and stuff, but definitely as far as buying it from somebody, you do not need to do that.
No, I wouldn't.
Because I've never seen somebody that's owned that's wanted less than like $600, and it is not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, you never know what people are going to attach themselves to when it comes to your comic. I mean, you would think that being that I have a comic strip where the most recognizable character is a troll, that I would get a ton of little troll things all the time. You think people would bring me troll everything?
Mm-hmm.
No, not once in 10 years. But people bring me panda stuff nonstop because they've associated pandas with my strip. And I think it's because Skull, even though I say he's a troll, he's a character that's so unique from whatever in their head is a troll normally that they don't picture Skull as a troll. They picture Skull as a skull.
Yeah. Right. That's absolutely right.
But a panda's a panda. And so, I mean, if I had branded PvP, you know, bluetroll.com, I'd be getting panda stuff. So, really, you know, I did this back in the day with my first comic strip in college, Captain Amazing. When I first created that character, his name was Captain Napalm, and he blew stuff up. And then a friend pointed out that Calvin and Hobbes used to dress up as Captain Napalm. And I sent an email to United Features to ask if it would be okay, and they said, no, you can't. We own it. And, you know, I was in junior high at the time, but I was devastated. And I changed the name to Captain Amazing, and he became known in high school with all my friends and that group of nobody remembered Captain Napalm anymore. And
right.
And then a movie called Mystery Men came out with a guy named Captain Amazing in it. And if they threw a fit and I changed it, I really don't think it matters.
Do you remember when Starslip was Starshift?
Only when you bring it up.
Yeah, I don't think about it either. And when I changed it to Starslip, I remember I didn't like it as well. I was like, it doesn't work, but I got to change it.
Yeah.
I changed it because Starshift was some game that was being developed but never came out and probably never came close to being released, and I don't know what studio was developing it, but I just got a little nervous and I thought, you know what, it's early enough in the comic that if I change it now that it's not going to hurt me. I certainly don't want to print my first book and have Starshift on the cover and have them tell me that I'm in trouble.
Right.
So...
I think it has to do with the fact, like today, one of the things I did today since I had no internet is I went through and cleaned out my inbox, which had thousands of emails in it. And it was like going through a time capsule. And I found emails, I was deleting emails from when I first updated my website recently from the thin slice version to the brown and teal version. And everyone hated it. I mean, there was a lot of people just emails of just people hating it. And it was fun to compare... to when a recent change in website that I switched back to this design, and everyone's sending me emails about how much they love that I went back to this design, that if I go back in my existing inbox, people hate it. And now they love it because, you know, all they really hate really is change.
Right.
So What's important is not that you get the URL that you think is perfect. What's important is that you get a memorable URL that's easy to type in, is catchy, and in some way relates to what you do. But don't worry about getting some holy grail of a URL.
You know, at the end of the day, what you're going to do is you're going to link to it or do whatever. And really, linking has gotten so easy. You'd need to know what an actual URL is. Nowadays, you can really – it's so sophisticated how you can hyperlink images and words and so forth that at the end of the day, you can easily put a link up. And if they like it, they're going to bookmark it. And a lot of times – people may be coming to your site for months before really knowing what the URL actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I go to technorati.com all the time, but what if that thing was called BlogSpider? Would I care? No, for me it would be BlogSpider. And if someone said, hey, what if this was called Technorati? I'd be, well, that's dumb. It should be BlogSpider. It doesn't matter. All that matters to me is the experience, and that name is associated with the experience. It's not the other way around.
No, that's absolutely true.
I'm changing my URL to, let's see, funinmypants.com.
Oh, it's taken.
Just to prove my point.
I was going to say, I'll bet that's taken.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Uh-oh.
Wait, what is fun in... Don't go to that, kids. Let me look it up first. Fun in my pants.
I'm not going to give it here, but in the book, in my chapter, it's just some guy's gallery. Not dirty.
But funinmypants.com is already taken, so...
I gave an example of a domain in one of my chapters in the book, and somebody wrote me and said, couldn't you have figured out some other URL? Because I visited it at work, and it's something bad. But when I was writing that chapter, it was not there. And it sounded innocuous.
Someone stole No Shoes for Tuesday.
Is it there?
Go to noshoesfortuesday.com, and it says, coming soon. And it's a comic website. Who's stealing my No Shoes for Tuesday comic?
That's a good question. About... Oh, something there.
I can't handle that.
Well, come up with No Shoes for Tuesday online. And you're golden.
I'll just make shoelesstuesday.com. Then we'll
I'll fight you. So it feels good to me.
I think we've done this one to death, my friends.
Yeah? Well, all right. This has been Webcomics Weekly.
let's go watch some Galactica.
Let's go watch some Battlestar Galactica.
I was going to say, death and taxes, that brings us full circle. Now let's go.
I have been Scott Kurtz, PvPonline.com. With me has been Chris Straub at StarSlip.com. And Brad Geiger is at the memorable Evil-Comic.com.
Indeed. Pancakes. Dave, we miss you.
We miss you, Dave. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah. SheldonComics.com.
SheldonComics.com.
Indeed.
And our book, How to Make Webcomics. What? No. How to Make Webcomics is on sale now, and you should pick it up. It's full of wonderful opinions on how to make a webcomic. Galactica.